Family, I'm an addict. My name is Michael. Takes me a minute, so bear with me. You know, I speak for a living now, and I get up in front of a lot of groups, large and small, all over the world, and I do it with almost no fear. But I can tell you, from the moment that Shirley with the program committee asked me to speak at this workshop, I have been absolutely consumed with self-centered fear. Now, there's a tie that binds us all together, because that's kind of the absolute core of my disease, which is called addiction. And that is probably the most fundamental thing that ties us together, is that we all suffer from the disease of addiction. And it was a long time before I understood what that was. I will take a moment to qualify, because it's important to me. I first came around these rooms in 1978, and for 10 years I was in and out of here, not quite able to surrender to the disease of addiction. Finally, April 22nd, 1988, I got clean, and I've been clean since then. And I'm hoping that tonight Patrice will loan me a day so that I can stand up at 13 years rather than 12 years, 364 days, and 18 hours. And if you missed the opening speaker last night, then you may not get that reference, but you missed an awfully good meeting. So many years later, you know, I have noticed that we do have a primary reason to be here. I mean, as individuals, our primary responsibility is to stay clean. And collectively, our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And in order to do that, we need to work together. But I will admit that when we first come in here, we don't know how to do that. It's okay. We got a guideline set out for us that other people before us laid out, and that is, you know, we have 12 steps that I've learned teach me to live with me, and we have 12 traditions that teach me how to live with other people. And I'm grateful that I had a sponsor I got when I first came in here and worked with for many years, who understood that. And so I had to work all 12 steps and all 12 traditions in the old classic way, and that was to write them all out. So at some point I gained some kind of a working knowledge about the 12 traditions. And so then I was asked to do this workshop. I was a little, I thought, well, that's kind of an unsexy topic, the ties that bind this together. Who the hell wants to go to a traditions meeting, you know what I mean? And I thought about it, and I agonized over it, and I talked to other people about it, and I talked to my sponsor. One thing I've learned to do here all along is talk to someone else, not me. And I got all kinds of guidance, you know, which was pretty much at the end wound up being, you know, do whatever you feel is right. Well, you know, so I started doing whatever I thought was right, and as of last night, I had fallen into the deep well of, you know, writing it all out and preparing a speech and getting all ready. And this morning I woke up and realized, you know, just toss that out and speak to you simply from my heart and my experience here. And there are some guiding principles that bind us together. Acceptance is one of them, third tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. What does that really mean? That really means that we accept people into these rooms just as they are, who they are. Not who we think they should be, or who we want them to be, or who they will be or can be, but simply who they are. Some patience. We learn some tolerance in here. We speak a common language. We suffer from the disease of addiction. We recover from the disease of addiction. It took me a long time to understand these principles, and it took me a long time to be able to work with other people to help the next suffering addict find recovery. The more I thought about this topic, it became very apparent to me that along with the principles that are outlined in the traditions and learning to speak the common language, there was something else that really did bind us together. And that was the principle of anonymity. Now, you know, when we talk about anonymity, there's the first thing that comes up, and that is, you know, you don't use your last name and those kinds of things. But really what I learned over the years after being in here was that through the principle of anonymity, I learned to take me out of the situation. You know, Michael gets removed, and when Michael gets removed from the situation, then there is room for a higher power to work in my life. These things are, like, really in the way. I feel like there's a barrier between us. And it's through that higher power that we conduct our group conscience, so that when we do the work of the group, it's not my way. It's our way. And our way, if we take a moment to focus on it and get ourselves out of the way, and get ourselves out of ourselves' way, then there's room for higher power to come in and work their magic. And then the longer I stay clean, I've noticed that I become in touch with my own humanity. Now, I don't know about you, but before I came into these rooms, I really didn't look at other human beings as human beings. I didn't have the ability. Might have wanted to from time to time, but I simply didn't have that ability. One of the things I've gotten in recovery is the ability, number one, to accept my own humanity. And I didn't feel good about being a human being for a very long time, because human beings are not perfect. And so I hated me for not being perfect. One of the things I've learned in recovery is that it is okay not to be perfect. In fact, I never will be, so let's just give it up. Once I'm able to accept my own humanity, then I'm able to see that humanity in each and every person that's in the room. Now, that doesn't mean I am all the time, you know, way up here on the spiritual platform. It just means from time to time, I get glimpses. And from time to time, my eyes are open, and my heart is open, and my mind is open. And when I can see and become in touch with that humanity, then I see that same little light in you. And then I see us all the same, because there is a spirit, I find, that connects all of us. That spirit is the shared higher power. Sometimes it starts out as just the higher power as expressed through a group. And then we learn to identify with our own higher power. And through all of that work and staying with it and keeping at it, I find that that spirit in me grows so that I can embrace everyone that's in here. I can embrace a newcomer. Quite often, my friends, bless them all, will tease the heck out of me. And one of the things they tease me about is I can be quite ornery, and I can be quite standoffish, and I can be quite unwilling to open my arms and give you a hug, and I can be quite unwilling to invite you out to coffee with me anymore. You know, I'm 12 years, 364 days, and 18 hours clean. You know what I mean? Life changes. And the truth about that is it's not because I'm a cold-hearted so-and-so. It's because at those moments, my fear is so huge. And I don't have a fear that if you get to know me, you won't like me. My fear is if you get to know me, you'll hurt me. Not that you won't like me, but you won't be able to help yourself. Because, you know, you're not perfect either. And I know that already. And I'm afraid. I'm afraid that you'll hurt me. Again, for me, what it comes down to is, along with the very structured format of the 12 traditions and those kinds of things that we do to keep the group together, to help us work with one another, what I find really are the ties that bind us together are the humanity and the fears and the issues and the insecurities. And I'm afraid to tell you until I get so much pain, I'm forced to tell you, and then I find out you've already been there. When I look around the room, any room in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, even at this stage in my recovery, I can walk into a room and feel very afraid and just like a newcomer. Until I take a moment to get in touch with my higher power, which then puts me in touch with my humanity, which then helps me to understand and see you as just another suffering human being also trying to find their way in this world of recovery. And then I become unafraid. Over and over and over again, for me, the ties that bind us together are the people and the spirit in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. There are the guidelines that protect us. But what draws me to it over and over are the people and their willingness to share with me, to walk with me, and to help me understand another aspect of my disease of addiction. Something I'm beginning to notice, you know, it never goes away. I never graduate from here. And quite often the lessons get more complicated and more difficult and more interesting, shall we say, as the years tick by. Developing friends in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous has become probably a very critical tie that binds me to you. I had friends before recovery. I had some friends that were actually very good friends. I had some friends that were just using partners. We all had those. And so I knew what it was like to have friends. But I can tell you, even with those friends, I held back just a couple of things. So even though they knew me well, they didn't really know me. In Narcotics Anonymous, I've been forced. And I will say forced because I don't make these changes until it is so uncomfortable and painful that I'm forced to. In Narcotics Anonymous, I have humbled myself to actually share some of the deep, dark, ugly stuff, vulnerable stuff, with my friends in recovery. Always at the risk that they may turn it against me a little bit later, you know what I mean, and use it against me, but the fear of living in that darkness is sometimes much greater than the fear of taking a risk to step into the light. And I will tell you that my friends, although they will tease me from time to time, they have never actually let me down. They comfort me, and they share with me, and then I feel better. They comfort me, they share with me, and I'm able to move on to the next lesson. On the way up here, whoever was going to be the second speaker had not shown up. And I thought to myself, well, this could either be a blessing or a curse because, as my friends know, I could be up here till probably Sunday morning. Because although I will first walk up to this microphone full of fear, I eventually get very comfortable and warm, and I'm feeling kind of comfortable and warm now. But just before the meeting actually started, I see that another speaker did show up. Then I was a little bit pissed off because I had already gotten myself ready for a full hour. You know what I mean? I reached back, you know what I mean? Flipped through the archives real quick. I did. Came up with lots more, you know, material that we could go on and on about. Then I stood up, and once I stood up, I realized, you know, Michael, it is not about you. You know, let's practice one of those principles that bind us together. Let's take me out of it and simply talk to you for the amount of time that I really am supposed to talk to you, to share with you some experience, strength, and hope. Early on in recovery, I was considered, I don't know if we're allowed to use this phrase anymore, it's probably so not PC, but I was like a little N.A. Nazi. And that meant, if you infringed at all on a tradition, if you infringed at all on any of the rules and regulations, you know what I mean, the rules and regulations that us service junkies make up for ourselves. It was my job, my personal mission, to let you know that you had committed this great sin against, you know, the fellowship. Oh, yeah. And I was known to stand up on chairs and hoop and holler and throw things and, you know, run you right out of the room, and felt very self-righteous and right. You know what I mean? You ever felt right? Dangerous, isn't it? Felt right about doing that because, you know, N.A. gave me a life. And I'm not going to have anybody muck it up. You know what I mean? Don't come in here mucking it up. And I don't do that anymore. I don't do that anymore. What I've learned over the years is the more I became tolerant of me, mm-hmm. I could become tolerant of you. The more I could accept my own shortcomings and my own humanity, the better I was able to accept yours and simply follow the principles that are actually outlined for us. You know, when we first start doing some step work or tradition work, I don't know about you, but I'm very like a zealot. You know what I mean? Oh, I finally got it. Oh, that's what it means. Then, you know, I'm so focused on that that I lose sight of the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is that we are here to help one another find recovery. Now, what kind of picture of recovery? Can you imagine a newcomer in the room where I'm standing on a chair hooping and hollering? Are they going to want to stay? I will have defeated my own purpose, right? Because I'm saving the place for the newcomer, and I'm keeping it safe for them. Quite frankly, I was probably running a few off as I was straightening out a member. Do you know what I mean? And once I realized that, I was kind of heartbroken about my own behavior. Absolutely. The very thing I wanted to avoid was what I was causing. So I chilled out a bit. And instead of preaching and teaching, I tried to become an example of those 12 traditions and 12 steps. And that took a while. That is not an easy thing to do because I guess when we first come in here, we're what, 90, 95% ego? Now, it takes a long time to get that much ego pulled in and underchecked. Do you know what I mean? Just it takes a lot of work. But I stayed with it. And today I can just gently and quietly work with my brothers and sisters in recovery to carry the message to the newcomer, really our primary purpose. And I can also stop when it's my time and not hog the next speaker's time. So I want to thank you all very much for being here and for inviting me here, and I'll keep coming back.
Again, my name is Wayne, and I'm an addict. I'd like to thank Michael, and I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Richard.
Good afternoon, group. I'm Richard Addict.
I'm Richard.
It's only through the grace of God and you people that was here before I got here that I'm now allowed to stand here clean today. Give me a second. I just got drafted to lead this meeting shortly before the meeting began, and it's really a blessing and it's good for me because left up to my own thinking, I'm not supposed to be here at the convention. And I fought a tooth and nail like a kid all the way since my wife began to mention that we need to go to the convention this year. I began to come up with all sorts of excuses from I need to build a playground in the backyard to resting to everything. And to show you how God worked in my life, yesterday I got an assignment at about 10 o'clock in the morning down to the Eastern Shore. do some to work on our network system. And when I ended up, it was 4:30. So, you know, the brilliant guy that I am, I said, well, you know, I'm too tired to drive back all the way to PG County. You know, I may as well go on down to the convention. And it's been a real hectic week, a week that I've been dealing with a lot of halt-type behavior. And so I surrendered. And I said, let me go on down to the convention. You know, I need to be there. And I began to feel more of a sense of gratitude for the program. And that's not to say that I'm not grateful for my recovery, but it's just say that even after coming up on 17 years, I still am scatterbrained. I still have my moments of insanity. I still have to call my friends from the first time I came into the fellowship in 83 and get a check on what's going on, call my sponsor, stay in touch. Those are the bonds that keep me together. I still rely on some of the friends I met in 83 and then again in 84 when I came back into the program after a brief relapse, thank God. Because I realize still today that I can't trust my own thinking at times, even though I try to. And that simply means to me that I'm really blessed with the gift of recovery. You know, I'm married, father of five kids, and a lot of genuine friends in my life. However, the one thing I believe that we all share as a tie is that I still have the healthy fear today that I don't have anything made, that my next fix would take me out. The one is too many and 1,000 would never be enough. That I can't use safely. And that my sickness would kill me. Today, as a result of the fourth step and the sponsor, I don't have any more top secret information. You know, that stuff that I said before I got here when I was on the streets that, you know, the stuff I'm going to take to the grave. And as a result of coming in this program, being willing, working on being honest, I started to peel away those layers of fear, of not trusting anyone, of self-righteousness, and believe that this program could work for a guy like me. So I was real screwed up. I started using at an early age, around 14, and I don't even remember why, but I started using it at an early age, and I stopped growing emotionally and mentally. But when you all got a hold of me, I really wanted to change my life, and I did what my sponsor told me to do. It wasn't easy. My sponsor told me to read the first three steps every day. I was saying, what the hell I have to do this for? You know, but I did it because at that time I was afraid. I was afraid that I couldn't stay stopped because I'd never been able to stay stopped for any length of time. The only time I was able to stay stopped was when I got locked up and after being locked up for the last time, I think that's when I first heard about Narcotics Anonymous, the great secret, I call it. But I never knew about Narcotics Anonymous. And my sponsor told me to go to a meeting every day. And I did that for the first 3 years. And then he told me to get in service. And at that time, there was creating the East of the River area. And he'd ordered me to become the chairperson of PI. Now, I thought that I had more important things to do, like go to, I think I was in the Diesel Institute then, I wanted to be a mechanic, and I thought that was more important, you know, but I trusted this guy, you know. At that point in my recovery, I think I was beginning to believe in God again, but I think I had more faith in my sponsor and his guidance. And as a result of that, in that trust, he told me that I could believe in his God until I got a God of my own. And I trusted that. You know, and I think one good thing for me, as well as probably a lot of us, a binding thing, was that we were very trusting out in the streets. And I somehow believe I was able to take that trust and parallel it in a positive way with my sponsor, doing sponsorship. And as a result, it forged the foundation of recovery that allows me to be here today. And through working with the PI subcommittee, for the first time in my life, I was able to get a perspective that Mike talked about, that humanity thing, where I started to really care about my fellow man and woman and myself in a deeper way. And as a result, I started to grow more spiritually, more in all areas. And I started to get an understanding of what service was about, getting more in touch with the program, attending step meetings, doing step work. These are the things for me that allowed me to continue to grow in this program. Also at that time, I had a couple guys come up to me and ask me to be their sponsor. Immediately I became fearful because I really didn't think I had enough of a message or I had enough of this program to hand it out. But in challenging my fears, as I seem to always do as a result of this program, you know, I found out that I did have something to pass on to the newcomer. And from that point in time on, I probably stayed in service from about 86 on into the early 90s. And what I learned is that those years of my recovery were some of the best years of my recovery for me, because I was going through a lot of personal situations. And what I find is when I go through personal situations or trying situations, that as much as I can get outside of myself and work on recovery and helping someone else, then it makes the journey much better. What I'm talking about is getting a new way of life. Coming in here, before getting here, never having any hope. Coming into a program that gave me hope, gave me back life, gave me a second chance at life that I didn't really believe. Having no self-esteem, coming in, believing that anything was possible, from that seed of hope, I've grown through the help of you all in this program to be a responsible, productive member of society. Not only do my friends in recovery trust me, but other people in the community trust me. You know, I'm put up to challenges and tasks to rely on other people, or people rely on me and make decisions. And you couldn't have told me this 16 years ago, that one day in my life I'd grow up to be a responsible person, because I never would have believed that. And it's only through the principles of this program, the ties that bind us together, and the people like you all that was here before me when I got here. Thanks for letting me share.
We have a little time left in this meeting, and we're going to open the meeting up. If anyone wants to share, would you please come to the podium?
Hi, I'm Dawn.
Hey, Dawn.
I have a secret, don't tell anybody, but I'm an addict. I've been in recovery for forever. I've been here for a whole, I think it's been a month and 2 weeks. And God, it seems like forever. And I say I'm an addict. Let me tell you, I'm an addict. I'm an addict with everything. I'm an addict with alcohol. I'm an addict with drugs. I'm an addict with food. I'm an addict with gambling. Most of all, I'm an addict with wanting to hurt myself. And unfortunately, there's a whole lot of vices in life that allow us to do that. And I've found pretty much every damn one of them out there. And as far as the addiction, the thing that's got me in here is I want what you guys have. I want it really bad. I want to be addicted to God. I want to be addicted to life. And I know that it can happen. I've actually been there times in my life when I've been addicted to life, where I've just been so happy to be alive, it's just not even funny. But unfortunately, it goes away. I can't seem to make it stay. And that's why I'm here. I'm going to try to find something that makes it stay, something that makes me be addicted to something good. And I need you guys, bad to show me how to do that, because I don't know. I really just don't know how to do it. Coming up here is a big step for me. When I tell you, you want to talk about fear? Oh, this is just a little fearful for me. I've never gotten up and talked. I went and read. I said, okay, you can do that. You can just put your head down. Just read the words that are right in front of you. And I did that, and I got through it. So I'm sitting in that chair, and I said, well, hell, I did that. I might be able to get up here, and I might be able to talk and say things. And it amazes me how these people come together here. It really does. You guys, it's just an incredible group. It really is an incredible group of people. And the thing about NA that's gotten to me, when I first came and I thought, well, I don't really belong in NA. Shit, I did drugs, but that was a long time ago. That was in my 20s. I was addicted to coke. I thought, well, I don't need this. And then I was addicted to gambling in my middle 20s. And then what ended up getting me here a month and a half ago was the fact that I went out and I was in a very bad relationship. And I let that relationship just ruin me. I basically let him take me back to a place where I was a long time ago as a kid. And inevitably what happened is I let him take me there, and I drank a fifth of tequila, and I drank 6 Crown and Diet Cokes, and somehow I got home. I have no fucking clue how I got home, but I got there, and I managed to find a bottle of Xanax and eat them all, and I tried to kill myself. And the sad part about that is I'm somebody that most people will look at and say, I got a hell of a lot to live for. I just bought a house. I had a really good job. I've got 2 beautiful children. I have a set of twins that are 12 years old. I really had a lot going for me, but you know what? I let one bad relationship turn me back to a point when I was a kid, nobody loves me. Why can't I make them love me? What is it about me that people just don't like? You know, and then what makes matters worse is I have a logical side to me that I look at this person I was in a relationship with, and I see him. He's ugly. On the inside, he's really an ugly person, you know, and I know that. But you know what? I won't put the blame on his ugliness. I put it on me. I say to myself, well, here's somebody that has no morals whatsoever, and I can't even make him love me. You know, what's the matter with me? Why? Why is that? And the sad part is I ate a bottle of pills. I was so mad I ate a bottle of pills, and I probably did it to try to hurt him, to show him. And the sad part was I didn't realize that the ones I was hurting were my children. You know, my children almost lost their mother. And that's the most selfish thing that you can probably do to a person. And the part of it was in the beginning, I didn't think it was all that selfish. I thought, shit, it's my goddamn life. I have a right to take it away if I don't want to be here. But you know what? I don't. I really, really don't. I have children, they're my responsibility, and they're only going to learn how to survive in this life if I can show them how to do that. So I'm going to keep coming back, and hopefully you guys are going to show me how to be addicted to the good things in life. And thank you very much for letting me share.
Anyone else?
My name is Sam Amatic. It's indeed a pleasure for me to be here. What's really getting me with this topic, I was just walking around the convention. Y'all know how they say, a lot of times we're around a lot of people, and sometimes you feel so alone. You know, I've been having a good time since I've been here, you know. But for me, you know, the information that I've been getting since I've been here, and it'll be 5 years next month, is that when you're into your fifth year, you get real shaky. And I had to look in the book, and it said, you know, the ties that bind us together. And that's basically where I'm at right today, that I know now, based on my own story, that it was times when I would feel like I'm feeling now, and I ain't had nobody to go to. I didn't really want to tell my mother or my father, my brothers, my sister, my kids, nobody, how I was feeling. Because I felt like, well, I'm a man. You know, I'm supposed to handle this thing. And the past 5 years, when I get these feelings, first thing I do is I know to go to a meeting or go to somebody in my network. Well, today, you know, like I'm with my partner, a guy who's been real effective in my recovery. And like I said, I just kind of find myself wandering around. You know, I know a lot of people from D.C., and they know me. I'm a wild and crazy, humorous guy. And I've seen a lot of my buddies that I came out to shelter with. You know, and it's been a real joyous day. But just for some reason, that thing kept pulling at me about, damn, Sam, but for real, you all alone. And I came up in this meeting, and I heard the lady just share, man. You know, and right then, man, my heart goes out to you because I felt there, too. You know, I've been there. And I was just sitting there thinking, I said, Lord, you know, these people are all I got now, you know, that really understand me. They say, you know, we're more alike than different, you know, and you people are the only one that understands me. You know, I can get on the phone, and I can call up and down the East Coast or, you know, call on my people and say what's happening and sound like it's all good, you know what I'm saying? But when it really comes down to it, man, I need you people more now than ever. I don't know if it's this five-year itch thing that y'all be telling me about, but I know that, you know, I'm going to try to get on through there. And they told me to double up on my meetings before I get, you know, before my fifth year, double up on my meetings after my anniversary. And I'm like, okay, that's all good. I'm going to do these different things. But, you know, like today, man, I just felt so grateful, man, because, like I said, I seen some guys that, since we came out the shelter, you know, everybody kind of like went their own separate ways, you know what I'm saying? But I kind of been, you know, staying still. I done seen people that I go to meetings on a daily basis, you know? The people in my life now are in recovery. I don't mean no harm, but I mean, if you ain't in recovery, man, I ain't got no rap for you, for real, because see, I know me, you know? I even got a thing they told me about if I see some of my buddies that I left out there, if I see them, let them hold some money. Shit, if I let them hold my money, I'm asking, man, are you going to get some good shit? You know? And that's not really conducive to what my thing is about. I just know that this is the best thing that's happening for me. It's the best thing that's ever happened for me. And I hope it continues to be the best thing that I can deal with in my life. Thanks for letting me share.